From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the basement studio, and I want to say before we start with today's episode, we are back in the basement studio together.
That's right. You know, when you did last week's podcast, our little bonus podcast for the auto stuff, you claimed you were in the basement studios. However, unless you had snuck into the basement studios without my knowledge, I'm not sure you were in a basement studio.
Why, did it sound different?
It did sound a little bit different, but not too much.
It sounded area.
Yeah, it sounded less exciting because I wasn't there.
Maybe it was our third floor studio in the upper echelons of the Atlantic Voice headquarters.
It's our studios east.
It was very different being on my own, but I'm glad that anyone listening to the pod still got a healthy dose of you with our recorded coverage of the auto show.
Yeah, I thought that worked out. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact between each of the clips, you were trashing me for my absence from being there, you know, it would have been perfect, you know. Not that I'm bitter or anything like that. But,
no,
you know.
But it was a way to use up, to get you in there even without you being there.
Yeah, I was there in spirit.
Yes, a sort of a religious experience.
So people should go back. I made the mistake. I have not sent out an email to everybody like I normally do. But so if you're just listening to this podcast and you didn't realize, we did a little bonus podcast in between, only half an hour long, basically. Clips from the show, more extended clips from going to the auto show. So, you know, our out of studio broadcast. I thought it was pretty good. It came out pretty well.
It did sound good, didn't it?
Yeah.
It sounded good technically. I guess we'll leave it to the viewer, the listener, to decide if it actually sounded informative right. In any way.
That's right.
We have a potpourri on the menu today of current events and what have you. We're going to plow straight in. Star Wars update.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's been a little while since we talked about Star Wars having, in the meaning the whole discussion we had about ILM being sold off to Disney. You know, some things have happened since then. They've selected a director for the next one, which is going to be the episodes that follow the original trilogy. So, J.J. Abrams has been selected as a director.
Yeah, he did Star Trek and TV shows and all kinds of things.
Best known for, he's done Star Trek most recently. He did, he was very instrumental in Lost in its early stages and directed some of those. He also directed, not all of them, but he was a producer also on Alias and back on Felicity. And so he's got a bit of a track record there on TV, and he's you know, really well thought of right now in the broadcast. He's done everybody thought he did a great job with Star Trek. There is a little bit of a tension there amongst the Trekkies and the Star Wars because he sort of defected over, and like I understand Chris Pine from the new Star Wars series. There's another Star Trek movie that has been done, and it's not been released yet. It's in finalization, right? So he did that one, but he has said that somebody else can do it. But Chris Pine was out there, I want him back. I want him to be doing my movies, you know, kind of thing.
Well, Chris Pine is working with Kenneth Branagh in the Jack Ryan franchise. He's the new Jack Ryan.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're still going to milk that old sucker.
Yep.
I want to say this, though, about I'm a Trekkie at heart. Before I'm a Star Wars, whatever you call it, Star, whatever you call it. I thought J.J. Abrams did a great job with the film, the reboot being that very popular Tollywood term for basically just using the same characters again. I remember listening to him being interviewed, and he'd said he was attracted to Star Trek because he wasn't a Trekkie.
That's right.
So, by extension, he's done a great job with a franchise that he didn't have any previous history with, and he could just concentrate on telling a good story. Are you concerned that the opposite might now apply, because he was a self-confessed Star Wars fan? Would you rather see Star Wars in the hands of someone who's not a fan than someone who... There's an old saying, you shouldn't let fans anywhere near what they love, because their idea of what they like is entirely different to what the regular audience are going to...
I don't think I'm worried about it. I mean, he's not writing it. I'm sure he'll have a big role in what it's going to be. There's a different producer, you know, that Kathleen Kennedy or whatever her name is, who's taking over all the productions, producing it. And the writer is that guy, Arndt, whatever his name is.
Did you do Toy Story 3?
The one that was, like, really... Toy Story 3 was really raved about. I haven't seen it myself. But
Buzz Lightyear, he's a space character.
Yeah, right.
He's a guy in a suit.
I'm not too worried about it. I mean, I do have, this is coming from a person who did like the Star Trek movie mostly, although I'll comment on something about it in a moment here. Loved Lost. I mean, just really liked Lost a lot. But there's something about the movies he does. It's like they don't have enough, or in the films and stuff, it doesn't have enough grit. It's too bright and shiny for me.
Star Trek is bright and shiny. That was always the thing about it. And we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to mention a series a bit later when there's a topic you want to get to. Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica, the TV series, the new TV series, yeah, tried to show space in a very industrial, blue-collar, warts and all type fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek has always been sort of utopian and almost very childlike in its sort of awe of everyone's good, and it's very simplistic in that way.
Yeah, but even like on Lost, you know, even though they're in the jungle, there was a certain brightness to everything that I thought was a little bit too far.
Oh, that was definitely the case with Felicity. I was a big fan of that show.
Is that right?
Yes, but
I never really watched Alias, but that was my impression also of Alias. And the big thing, the reason I was going to give Star Trek a hard time is probably not a lot of people. I don't know how many people have seen it, but one of the main, MacGuffin. It's like an object that has to deal with in writing things.
Just moves the story. It's a MacGuffin,
right? So, but maybe it's not a MacGuffin. But it's that big red orb of red matter.
Yeah.
Now, this red matter is supposed to be this futuristic discovery that powers things fantastically, and the villains get a hold of the big blob of red matter, and they take little injections of it that, like, eat up whole planets or something like that. But the visual was bigger than a beach ball, but just a big blob, very perfectly spherical red matter sitting in the middle of the room. It was the kind of thing that's, when I think of J.J. Abrams and things looking too polished and nice and stuff like that, the idea that this infinite energy source is in this pristine white room and it's just a blob and you can inject a little piece and take it out, I just thought that was a little bit goofy. Like, I could easily see him going the wrong direction along the lines of the Jar Jar Binks and all that sort of stuff. Not in terms of plot, but just the feel of it. Like, you know, it's too polished and shiny. Yeah, exactly,
yeah,
like that. So I'm hoping he doesn't do that, because what I really, you know, the original Star Wars, and maybe it was as much a product of being the late 70s, early 80s filming, it had more of a grit to it, it seemed to me.
Oh.
I don't know how gritty the Ewoks are, but, you know, but there's some level that I'm hoping he can bring that to bear there. But other than that, I mean, I think he's very good at marshalling himself. Of course, he loves time travel, and hopefully he doesn't introduce any time travel.
Well, Star Wars has always stayed away from that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's been much more a Star Trek convention as a way to sort of lazily get through plots.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this about the new Star Wars, and we are going to talk about Star Wars a lot. It will appear a lot on the show as we head towards whenever this movie arrives, because I think it is going to be a major event. I'm now going to say something, and I'm going to trademark or copyright this phrase, because I'm going to use it a lot until the Star Wars movie appears. Those last three movies sucked. You're going to hear me say that a lot. Those last three Star Wars movies sucked. So that being said, the bar is actually quite low for J.J. Abrams.
That's probably true. Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard. He's not going to do worse. I know that.
With Jar Jar Binks, the little kid, who knows what else, Jimmy Smith, Samuel L. Jackson, you can't do any worse than those films.
It's interesting. I mean, maybe part of the reason he's willing to take, he's thinking to himself, I can easily clear that bar, and everybody's going to say, better than the last three.
Better than the last three. And that's the thing. Now, the original Star Wars series is 40 years ago. It has its own iconic place in cinema history. In a weird way, what he does now is not going to be compared to that. Because you've already reached a point where, nothing is good as that.
There was a hint, however, that one of the major stars, or some of the major stars, might be reappearing in the new ones.
I did read that.
You know, Mark Hamill, at one of his conventions that he goes around to and speaks at, it was asked about it, and apparently he's very willing to talk about it. And he said, you know, George Lucas had called him up and the other main stars, saying there was a spot for them in the new movie. They were writing it in such a way. Apparently he was told, If they decided not to go in it, meaning Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, you know,
it was all for one for all type thing. They were either all in or all out. Right. That's what I read.
And moreover, if they decided not to, they would be written out. Like, in other words, it wasn't a case where George Lucas was saying, hey, I'm going to deal with something that's an old Luke Skywalker, and I want you to do it. And if you don't do it, I'm going to just find some other older guy to, like, play the role. He said, you know, if you want the job, you can have the job. If you don't, we can write around it. We don't need to have that sort of thing. And so, obviously, Mark Hamill seemed pretty eager for it. He's obviously not a Harrison Ford, but he makes a living. He's not like he's sitting there, you know, in his mom's basement, you know.
I'm going to say this now about all three of those lead characters: Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, and Harrison Ford. They've all got plenty of time with their hands right now. We can have a go at Mark Hamill for going to conventions and voicing video games, but Harrison Ford's career of late...
Yeah, very recently, it's gotten kind of quiet.
I'm surprised. I was surprised that he was interested, and then when I thought about it, it didn't surprise me that Harrison Ford was interested, because he is a guy looking for a hit late in his career. Because he doesn't produce, he doesn't direct, so he's not like an Eastwood as he ages. He needs an acting role in order to be... No, and I'm not meaning this in terms of his own ego. In terms of being on the front lines of the business, he's only got one way in. Because he doesn't write, he doesn't direct, he doesn't produce.
Is he still married to Ally McBeal? Isn't that who he married? What's it?
Yeah, Ally McBeal. Yeah, whoever she is. But, I mean, frankly, Ally McBeal, I think that's enough. People know who we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So well, I couldn't remember name, if he was still, you know, she may want him to, you know, go out, get out there and get a paycheck, because I don't think she's getting one.
So. No, she's not working either.
Yeah. So, so Mark Hamill said he might be in there. The other Star Wars news in terms of, instead of a new movie...
I want to say this. Oh, okay. He also mentioned, Mark Hamill also mentioned in the one article I read, when he talked about the whole gang, he actually named another name, I think the guy who played the gold robot. The annoying British-accented robot.
Yes, which now suddenly has gone right out of my head, playing C-3PO.
Not the little bleeping one,
yeah.
The other one. Again, not a Star Wars
Daniels.
Fan.
I think his name is Anthony
Last
Daniels.
Last movie sucked. Whatever his name is, he also mentioned...
He also mentioned Lando Calrissian, Billy Dee Williams, I think, in the list of people that would be there.
That's right.
I would not quite have thought of him as a central character, although he does in two of the movies. He was in the second and third movie.
Realistically, though, for all of us, it's the three main dudes, and then after that, I can give or take... Well, I can give or take Lando, Billy Dee Williams, although I think Billy Williams is very cool back in the day. The robots are actually integral to the story.
Well, and they...
as much as they annoy me, I'm a realist to know if I go to the new Star Wars movie and we go 40 minutes and there's no robot, I'm going to sit there and go, where are the robots?
Yeah. I think he was cracking a joke about this. I don't even think it was in the recent interviews. I think he's talked about it at other times, was about, you know, he finds out the one girl he ever liked, meaning the character, finds out the one girl he ever liked was his sister. And so, you know, he's always joked about where would he go from there? Well, he in his head, he was going to end up being like Obi-Wan Kenobi off in the desert with hanging out with some robots. And that was going to be it. And that's way that and that is actually the way you could write him back in, that he's gone off to be a, you know, a Jedi hermit kind of thing or, you know, training from afar or something like that. And then, you know, he kind of pops in at the beginning of the new episode to hand off the leadership title or something like that.
I'm not sure what's weirder, the him and his sister thing or him spending all his time with those two robots.
Yeah, robots are friends.
Exactly.
But I was starting to say is the other Star Wars news is a TV show that has been talk. Now, this is actually not new talk. There's always, I think since 2007 or so, there's been some talk of a TV show that would be set between the two series. So it would have been pre-Luke Skywalker.
After the movies that sucked, but before the movies are really good.
It was going to be set there on the Empire's home planet, which is Coruscant. I can't remember how to pronounce it. I can't even remember how to pronounce pronunciation.
I'm more disturbed to even know it. Right. Never mind pronounce it.
Well, I looked it up beforehand. Okay. So, you know. There was going to be a whole plot, and apparently... George Lucas said he'd written scripts for 50 episodes of this TV show. I mean, that's talking about...
Two seasons.
Season
in the U.S. is 22 episodes. 22 to
on
a
network
episodes.
Type of thing. Yeah. I mean, like all those cable series are like... And it's supposed to be... supposed to be a one-hour episode.
Okay.
And the idea was going to be a character-driven show about the politics and the crime underworld of that planet.
Oh!
So, like, on a much lower level. In fact, I think the working title was Underworld. And it was all about this sort of stuff. And as you might expect, you know, Star Wars is such an expensive property. I think when they originally did this, he was developing this, but it was going to cost a fortune for anybody who wanted to put it on the air.
Sure.
Well, now Disney owns ILM, owns all the rights to the Star Wars stuff, owns all the rights to these scripts, apparently. So now it can put them on ABC, which it also owns, without having to pay anybody. You know, it only owes itself money. Maybe it pays something between the different corporations to, like, you know, do something from a tax purpose, but they're not out of pocket anything to use this asset now of all these scripts. And so they've been talking about doing this, and I think it could be really interesting.
You've talked about this potential TV show and criminal underworld, so it's not going to have Muppets in it.
It could have Muppets. Why not? You know, there are like other things from other planets. Although I'm sure it'll be computer driven. As a TV show, I'm more likely to go with Muppets than computer-generated things.
But is it going to be dark and the underworld of the Empire, or is it going to be feel good? Hey, here are some Muppets. Isn't this great? Because, again, that was your one concern about the new Star Wars movies.
I haven't read the scripts, but the feel of it, the sound of it, was that it would be dark and underworldly. It's an interesting idea. I mean, I've been recently reading a book.
So PG-13 Star Wars.
Well, it's going to be on TV. So who knows what it's going to be. But, I mean, listen, look what's on TV right now. That's true. You know, like The Following and all these things are pretty gruesome stuff. It's not like the networks are shying away from these sort of heavy-duty plot lines.
Basically, we might see Luke Skywalker's butt when he disrobes from that white thing that he wears. That's what you're telling me.
It's not high on my list of what should happen. But and there wouldn't be a Luke Skywalker yet because it'd be before he was taken off of his home planet there. But it is interesting. I was starting to say I've been reading this book by this guy named Alan Sepinwall, who's a TV critic. It's called The Revolution Was Televised, and it's a pretty thick book. He self-published it, but it's available on Amazon. But each one is a chapter of some of these major series. They're calling it the golden era of TV, which starts with, like, Sopranos, The Wire. But it also includes Battlestar Galactica is one of the ones that has on this. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, when they brought it to you. Because these are long TV series that had full-on arcs, and we've talked about plot arcs in shows and stuff like that before. You could really take something like this Star Wars thing that they're talking about and turn it into a very, joke about it, Sopranos in outer space kind of thing. But that could be kind of an interesting plot and interesting thing to see for a couple of seasons kind of thing. So,
I'm not a hardcore sci-fi fan. I think I'm a peripheral sci-fi fan, so I take a passing interest in Star Trek. I watch Doctor Who. I watch the Star Wars movies. I'm not all the way in. I did really enjoy Battlestar Galactica, the rebooted TV series. But I will say this about this general Star Wars idea of a TV series. I don't doubt for a moment that there is an audience for that. And I think the name Star Wars gets everyone in the room, and then from that moment on, you're staying with it either because it says Star Wars above the title, or it reminds you about Star Wars, or it's one of those shows that goes off in its own direction, and you're sitting there thinking, watch this show, it's better than Star Wars. Don't be put off by the fact it says Star Wars, which was exactly how I was about Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. I would say to people, don't worry if you haven't seen that show. Forget that show in the 70s. That's nonsense. This is much better TV.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there is the potential for that.
So I'd be sort of optimistic. It'd be interesting to see what they do with it. So, I mean, the one kicker on it is doesn't sound like there's any space in it. I mean, it sounds like they're on the ground the whole time. So it is kind of funny that this would become part of the Star Wars thing. But listen,
it's a bit cheaper.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to have to do all the special effects of building Death Stars and things like that. But I'm optimistic. It could be interesting.
Let me ask you a question. Hopefully information that you've gleaned from either A, your sources, or B, your internet search engine. Which of these two projects is going to come first? Realistically,
the movie's coming first. I think the movie's already, is supposed to maybe be out next year, or maybe certain. If it's not 2014, it's 2015. And my understanding of the TV show is it's now gone into development, which means people are having meetings and figuring out all kinds of junk. So it could be a while till we see something there. But it'd be interesting. I mean, I guess it'd be smart of them if they could do them around the same time. You know, like if you did the movie but then rolled out the TV show right after that, that would be pretty ideal in terms of assuming the movie's decent enough that it gets some attention.
Knowing how big that franchise is and how deeply passionate its fans are, that thing could be hoovering up attention and cash.
Yeah. Well, we can move from things from fictional outer space to things from factual outer space.
Okay.
We recently had the meteorite.
Yes.
It's now been titled just The Meteorite.
Meteorite Attack.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, I'm sure, has seen the videos of this thing going into Russia and the flash in the sky. And I got to say, I mean, when I first saw that, I was blown away. That's crazy. I mean,
that was some spectacular action.
Yeah, and the fact that it was it's not like it landed in a town and blew up the town, but it went close enough to a town that there was a lot going on. I mean, Russia's a big place.
Oh, yeah.
It could have landed any number of places where, you know, nothing but some bison or some elk or some whatever the heck animals they have in the Siberian wilderness.
Some sort of yaks.
Exactly.
Yaks.
Would have only seen it. But here it is where we got pictures all over the place.
And if you've never eaten yak, it tastes like chicken.
Yeah. Hairy chicken. But I thought that was pretty interesting. What did you think?
I thought it was some spectacular action. And it came the same time, and I'm now going to go into one of my conspiracy theories. It was all about the same time that there was that big hoo-ha about the asteroid just missed Earth.
That is a little weird. That
as far as I'm concerned, because I've seen Deep Impact, Meteor, Armageddon. I've seen They're All Your Big Rocks Attack Earth movies. Uh-huh. I've seen all of those. Because I'm a peripheral sci-fi fan.
It's never going to rocks attack
anything. In all those movies, some little rocks attack first, and then the big one is coming after. I believe that the rocks that attacked Russia were part of the same group that came with the really big one that just missed Earth.
Well, then they weren't very successful. I mean, like, you know, if the big rock missed, is it swinging around for another pass in a couple thousand years?
What I'm saying is, these things travel in packs. Right? That's why it's a meteor shower. There's like 1,000 of them in a big cloud going through space.
It's like a meteorite gang.
Yeah, I think that's one way to put it. Mm-hmm. But it's not just like everyone was talking about the asteroid that just missed us, like there was just one big boulder flying through space. What I'm saying is, astronomically, it's a whole debris field of rocks flying through space.
All right.
And I believe it all came at the same time. This was all connected.
So, but do you think we're safe now, or do you think the big one is going to be coming along and that's going to fit into the movie plot of this story?
I mean, I hope there's not another one coming, but it wouldn't, with Hollywood, it wouldn't surprise me.
Right.
We're still waiting for Armageddon 2, but without Bruce Willis.
Oh, they can do that. Well, it was pretty interesting. I was looking when it first happened, and I'm sure people have seen that a lot of the video is from dashboard cameras.
Yes.
And this is... Well, I'll come to the whole problem I have with discussing this stuff at this point. But the dashboard cameras, for people who don't know, are in Russia. It's pretty routine to install a dashboard camera on your car because you get in so many accidents and people fake getting hit and they get in fights. And so it's just sort of the Wild West of driving around places that everybody has these cameras running all the time just for their own, you know, evidence if something should go wrong.
Yeah, but also they're probably making loads of those world's worst driver shows that show up at 9 o'clock
at night. So when it first came out, right, and they came out and there was a number of these dashboard videos, and then there was I saw a short blog post like the same day saying, hey, how come we're seeing so many dashboard videos? And they were explaining the whole thing with Russia. And I was like, well, this is going to be a good topic for the podcast.
Okay.
Well, since then, everybody's done it. Like, you know, like, it's on regular news shows. It's on The Daily Show. It was on... I remember I saw one night it was... The Daily Show was using footage from a news broadcast, a regular network broadcast, to talk about how crazy this stuff was. And then right after that, Colbert was doing the same exact stuff. And I'm like, it's been overexposed by the time we get to it.
Right,
our podcast apparently is not timely enough
to catch up with these things. Let me get this straight now. You had a whole riff on dashboard cameras. You're unhappy that the regular media have beaten us to the punch. All I can say is, we could have covered this topic, but you chose not to show up to the basement studio for the last episode, leaving me on my own.
It all comes around to that. It was overexposed at that point already, but it is sort of disappointing because I thought that was going to be like a lot of shtick we could have done, and now it's just been done.
So your impression is that it's in the same way that lots of people here have... They've put a GPS unit into their car. Mm-hmm. Everyone in Russia puts these things in their car.
Yeah, I don't know about everyone, but there's a lot of them. Apparently, yeah, like they've got the cameras. And, you know, if you go look online now, I'm sure you could just go to YouTube and search Russian dashboard cameras, and you'll get pictures of people getting in fights. I saw one where, like, you know, they get into, like, a fender bender, and the guy in the front car goes out, opens his trunk, pulls out a bat. The guy in the back car grabs a hatchet, and they both stand there, and they threaten each other with their bats and hatchet, and they say, you know what, this isn't going to work out well. They get in their two cars, and they drive away.
But a lot of
fist fights and things like that. And the people, I saw at least two different videos of people faking getting hit, where they would walk out in front of a car.
Like an insurance scam?
Yeah, exactly. And they would, like, basically fall on the hood of the car, even though the car wasn't moving, and their big plan was, well, they were going to claim they were hit by this car and demand some money payment from the driver, and the driver must just, at that point to his dashboard camera and go, listen, buddy, I'm going to be sending your video off to YouTube, and you won't be getting any money from me.
So do you believe that the media shower was faked?
No, I don't think so.
All right, I'm just throwing it out there. If everyone in Russia is getting dashboard cams, and then there's a whole subculture of faking accidents in order to, you know, further your lawsuit, yeah. Who's to say You know, you don't have your buddy off to the side throwing dirt from the garden store across your windscreen.
I did wonder about the hole in the lake.
Flashing a flashlight.
Did you see the pictures of the hole in the ice in the lake?
Yes.
And, like, everybody standing around, and I said, that's a little too perfect that it would have gone in there. I thought that seemed a little weird, and it wouldn't have surprised me if somebody basically, once the meteorite fell, they said, yeah, let's go cut a hole in the ice, and we'll show a bunch of pictures. It'll be hilarious.
As someone who believes, there is a part of me that believes, a part of me that believes that the moon landings were faked. I'm not going to put it past a bunch of Russians standing around the lake, pointing to a hole, going, look, this is where it went.
Now, when you say a part of you, which part of you believes that?
The conspiracy theory part of me.
How big is that? Would you call that, is that about 10% of you, or is that more like 50% of you?
It changes depending what I'm doing. If I'm actually watching it on TV, 90% of me believes it's faked. But if I'm sitting here in the basement and you say to me, Zeph, make a case for the moon landings being faked, mm-hmm. only about 10% of me believes it.
Wasn't O.J. Simpson in that movie, the one that was on the Capricorn one?
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, and they say that that's all part of the whole thing, you know. That's why O.J. was framed into the crime and stuff like that, because of his knowledge of that.
In the movie, he escapes wearing a white astronaut suit.
Have you ever seen
this? In real life, he escaped in a white 4x4.
There's a whole bunch of people who believe that, you know, Stanley Kubrick directed The Shining, and they believe that The Shining has a lot of symbolism that is Stanley Kubrick telling everybody that he was the one who was involved, who the government got to fake the moon landing.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to watch The Shining again. I keep watching 2001. I thought you were going to tell me 2001.
No, there's whole websites like where they show things in a room that, I don't know if you remember this, he's being interviewed in the room by the to become the caretaker. Okay. And there's like an eagle on the windowsill and something else and things like that. And people are saying, oh, you know, this was supposed to be like the eagle has landed. He's basically telling everybody through symbols in his interesting The Shining movie that, you know, I can't tell you all this because the government swore me to secrecy, but I faked the moon landing.
You've just provided me with 6 hours of work on YouTube now to research this.
And 2 blog posts at least.
I'll be locking my door at work, putting a do not disturb sign, and I will be investigating this completely.
Yep.
I guess there was nothing in Eyes Wide Shut that gives it away to the moon landing. But anyway, that's an aside.
But speaking of European things,
yes,
and weird European things, let's say, how about, and maybe conspiracy theorists for that matter, what's the whole deal with King Richard III and being found in the bottom of a parking lot or underneath a parking lot that they were digging up?
This is one of the most this is the biggest non-story story in British media.
It can't be a non-story when it's you dig up a 500-year-old king, or 500 years dead. It's probably more like close to 600 years old.
I don't understand the fascination. I don't get it. I don't get why this is such a big story. So they found some bones in a car park.
He was the King of England. He ran the country, admittedly only for 2 years. And I got a lot of questions about, like, what the heck he was doing out in a battlefield. I mean, listen, if you run the country, if you're the king,
yeah, but that was,
you know, so many people can do this for you?
No, back then, you had to lead from the front.
Why?
Well, there was nothing else to do.
Stand behind everybody and let them get in the fight.
That's how you become king. Richard I went on a crusade. That's how you showed your kingshipness.
Yeah, I feel like that was like more of like being a out PR front. Stunt.
You know? Well, but that's what it is.
Yeah, here he got beat by
that. You ride around on a horse, you say a few inspiring things, people go, I'm voting for that guy. Yeah. Well, not voting, but boom, he's king.
Right, I'm behind him. It doesn't sound like he had a lot of support. I mean, so
he's the big villain, isn't he? To quote Shakespeare.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they say, you know, he's had horrible...
My kingdom for a horse.
Was that Shakespeare?
That's Richard III, Shakespeare.
Oh, that's right, because he lost his horse during the battle. Is that the whole deal?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just know that's from Richard III by Shakespeare.
Oh, I think that's the deal. So he was
now
in this battle.
Now is the winter of our discontent.
Oh, well, I don't know.
There you go. Look at this.
I did some internet research. I find...
That's the Atlantic Voice Shakespeare Repertoire Company. That's one of our subdivisions. Now, I just brought that little snippet to you.
You're not really representing the English side of the Atlantic Voice too well. Yeah. But because I find the history of the monarchy there really kind of fascinating in terms of the changes from family to family. I mean, we all, I think you grew up thinking, well, you know, there's a king or a queen, and then they have kids, and there's a king or and they just march down.
Yeah, no,
and we eventually got to Queen Elizabeth today, and the baby bump and all that sort of stuff on Kate Middleton and all that sort of stuff. But Boy, it's like, first of all, none of these people are actually from England, right? They all came in from different places. Like, I think the Tudors were backed by the French and all this sort of stuff. But, boy, the families are shifting back and forth. So it's too complicated. Like, every time I go to look at something, I'm like, oh, it starts to hurt my head. But I did look up a little about King Richard III. He was only in office. He was only the king for, like, 2 years. And it was basically because when his brother was the king and died, and his 12-year-old son.
But he whacked the little kids.
Well, they'd say he may have or may not have. But in any event, he took the crown from them one way or another. He's sequestered them.
Yeah, I mean, that's
all
what I'm saying. He's like a villain king. I only know about Richard III basically from seeing, like, Kevin Spacey and movies with C. Ian McKellen. That's really all I know about Richard III. And I'm from England.
So all I know is the Atlantic voice. You're supposed to be upholding. Didn't you take classes when you were in school?
Yes, and I'm now going to give you some King Richard III facts. He had a hunchback. He spoke in an evil, croaky voice.
This is all based on your movies that you've seen.
And he whacked two little kids in order to become king.
Yeah.
Now, so let me say this now. That's the only reason that finding a load of bones and a building site is a story. If he was one of the 9 Edwards and 24 Henrys and who knows how many other, you know, because everyone had the same name, the 4 Charleses. If he was just like a regular king who didn't do anything, we'd be like, oh, great, yeah, we think it's the king.
It seems
unlikely.
Because
he's a villain king.
Yeah, but I mean, if there was a missing king.
Let me ask you a question. Who's a more interesting character from Star Wars? Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader?
Darth Vader. More interesting.
Richard III is the Darth Vader of back in the day, 16th century.
Well,
he was a villain king. He was killing people, literally stabbing people in the back. Not in his own back, because he had like a hunchback. He's the original villain king. That's why.
Just
this
so everybody
is a story.
Knows, he apparently didn't actually have a hunchback. That's the way he's been played in the movies. He did have scoliosis apparently, and like, but you know, lots of people have scoliosis. But
who do you want me to believe? Some book or Kevin Spacey?
But
some book.
Kevin
or
Spacey
Ian
played
McKellen.
Him. Well,
yeah,
he's played him on
stage.
In I don't dispute
so
anything.
Laurence Olivier,
I don't dispute anything of what you said. But I'm pretty sure if there was a king whose body was missing, who was a more mundane king,
we wouldn't care. It's not interesting.
No, if the British dig him up from under a parking lot, they're gonna care. I mean, we just talked a couple episodes about all the pomp associated with a coronation. If you find a body of a king from 600 years ago, it's gonna matter.
Well, but why? Okay, one, how do they know it's him?
I can tell you how.
But tell me how. How did some bones?
They
could have been a dog.
They matched his DNA because now we can track things by family things, and it's called mitochondrial DNA. It's DNA in certain parts of the cells. Well, this is hilarious.
Please,
no, listen. They tied it.
Okay.
To a guy who's a cabinet maker in Canada, who is in fact the descendant of King Richard's sister who lived, and this is all a known descent type of thing, and they matched up, and the folks who deal with genetics of royalty basically said it's like 99.9% certain that this guy is definitely King Richard
III. Well, you know something? It's funny that you say that, and we joked a few moments ago about how all the monarchy, the British monarchy, are basically all foreigners. This now makes sense that Richard III was related to a cabinet maker. But I don't think he was from Canada. I think he was from Sweden.
That's where that family was from?
Yeah, because it became the Ikeas. That was the house of Ikea. In the same way the house of Tudor. Look, here's the bottom
really
line.
Bad.
Here's the bottom line. I'm supposed to believe that they found some bones while they were moving dirt around to put up a parking lot next to the store, right? They found some bones. They've done some testing of the bones. And from the testing of these bones that are 600 years old, we're supposed to believe that some cabinet maker living in Toronto is related to Richard III. Is this what you're telling me?
Not exactly. But they know that the cabinet maker is related to King Richard's the...
You know what they ought to do?
Sister.
Here's what they ought to do. Just like in Jurassic Park, when they got the dinosaur bones and they made dinosaurs, they should make
clone
DNA
back and see if
and see if this is Richard III.
See if he kills his nephews again.
And if it is Richard III, then the link is with the meteors, because the meteors killed the dinosaurs.
Could if you know if
boom
he, if he did that right, Okay. Could he now claim the throne? I mean, because the folks who run the throne now, they killed him off and they took the throne. And that's the Tudor family. Or Elizabeth now, she's the Tudor family descent, right?
Or
is there another change?
The technicalities. I think this is the problem. This is the trouble with monarchy
in
general.
You are going to have to spend more time in school.
No. The problem with monarchy in general are there aren't any written rules that anyone follows. Well, which was why Richard III was able to become king at the moment. At the time, he was just killing people. That was the only rule he followed to get the throne. There wasn't like, ooh, what does it say in the book, who's in charge? There's no book that says who's in charge. So if Richard III were to return, he would have to start whacking Prince Charles, Harry, William, whoever it is. That's how he would become king.
Mm.
But he can't just come back and go, I am Richard III, you know, and flip out his ID and hope that his lineage alone is going to get him the gig.
Right.
The deal with royals is, you've got the gig until someone kills you, and then you're king.
Well,
that's how it works.
It doesn't apply now. I mean, if you know if somebody went in there and killed her off now, and they could take the throne.
It wouldn't apply now.
Well, why don't we go do that then?
Well, we could.
I was wrong.
Of course, we wouldn't be able to be king because you don't believe in doing this stuff yourself. And the whole point of back in the day is you had to kill him yourself, and then you became king.
So I think I'm wrong.
Have you ever seen King Arthur?
Tudors
and the Round Table.
Yeah.
King Arthur becomes king because he takes the sword out of the stone. Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell the other guy to go and do it and then give me the sword. It doesn't work that way.
He doesn't get the sword from the lake? Or is
no.
that Monty Python?
That's no, Monty that's Python. Monty Python.
Oh, yeah.
He first takes the sword, pulls it out of the stone, and then everyone goes, you are king, King Arthur, and then he's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get his buddy to do it, because then if his buddy did it, he would be king.
Yeah.
And he would still just be Arthur the sidekick.
They probably faked that too, just like the moon landing.
All right, fair enough.
I think I'm wrong. I think you know the current queen is House of Windsor, right?
The House of Windsor.
Like, so I don't know how that
they're all German or something.
Like
I don't know.
We will,
none of them are from Britain.
I'm going to charge you with the responsibility as the English half of this thing to do some research and come back with a royalty family tree on the blog.
But again, though, this comes back to where we started. Okay, so they found some bones. And I read a story that they were going to rebury him or something. This is yesterday's news. This is 600 years ago.
Yeah. Well,
none of us know the legitimacy of this stuff in the first place.
Oh, well. I don't know. Sounds pretty legit to me.
All right.
You know, I believe the DNA testing.
All right. I'm more interested in using DNA to bring back dinosaurs.
Well, that would be cool, too. I'm game for that.
Yeah, you see, if I give you a choice, the next thing you know, you're going, ooh, Richard III? Ooh, look, a dinosaur. And then that's going to be more exciting.
So before we came on the show, you told me you knew how we could get to our next topic from this topic, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that works.
What's our next topic? Oscar Pistorius. Well, it would appear he's a bit of a villain, too.
All right, villain, too. Yeah, well.
Plus, in all seriousness, he has a disability.
That's right.
But so, Richard III had a bad back,
yeah.
And he was always crouched up. And
I see the connection there.
So there you go. But Oscar Pistorius, he looks like he was a villain.
Yeah. What do you think? I'm assuming that you are full in conviction mode.
Oh, I think
this guy did
it.
He's the worst ever. It's all premeditated and all that sort of stuff.
I've never been. I've had my car stolen.
I assume everybody knows who Oscar Pistorius is, by the way. Oscar Pistorius is the.
He's the guy that the Atlantic Voice website was very critical of when he tried to double dip at the.
Oh, Olympics. Yeah. That's one area where the two of us agree that this whole running in the Olympics thing with the blade. So he's the guy he's the blade runner. He's had his legs amputated, ran the Olympics. We actually saw him run in the Olympics over there in London.
And of course, Harrison Ford was blade runner, too.
It all comes together. There, that could have been your segue.
That could have been the segue. Yes, I completely forgot.
So he's, you know, as once we get to that point, I'm assuming people know he's been accused of killing his girlfriend in their house. He claims that he thought there was an intruder. It is apparently a fairly dangerous area, a lot of break-ins,
you know,
things like that. And in the middle of the night, he heard somebody in the bathroom, thought it was an intruder, and shot through the door four times and managed to hit her with three of them.
This is why I believe that he done it. I get that clearly in South Africa, apparently there's a lot of problems with sort of, I don't want to say low-level crime, but, you know, that sort of home invasion.
Yeah.
People roaming the streets
It's fairly high level crime,
well, yeah,
but it's.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm not talking about mafia crime. I'm talking about sort of random street crime, I think is maybe the phrase I'm looking for. As I said a few moments ago, I've had my car broken into. I don't know historically of any other incident where a burglar, upon being caught by the homeowner, has locked themselves in the bathroom.
Right.
Doesn't your brain tell you that normally, if I'm home alone and I think someone's breaking into my house, I'm going to be locking myself in the bathroom? I'm not going to chase him around the house, and then he's going to lock himself in. What's he going to do when he locks himself in the bathroom? Is he going to try and call the police to come and save him?
No, maybe he's trying to go out the window. That's the way you always do it in the movies, right? You get locked in the bathroom, and then you try and get out the bathroom window, but the bathroom window is too small, and you can't get through the bathroom window, or it's on a second floor, and you can't get through, and then you're stuck in the bathroom.
There were reports of arguments going on beforehand, and I just find it very strange that the victim in this instance, her body... I don't think her body was found, but apparently they have evidence of the fact that she was shot through the bathroom door.
Yeah.
Now,
well, I don't think the same thing, because he says that's what he did.
That's what he did. But again, I really question this notion of someone, a burglar, someone with evil intent has broken into your house to steal your big screen or do whatever, and then they're suddenly going to get all scared and lock themselves in a bathroom. Admittedly, in a society where apparently there's a lot of crime and everyone's carrying guns. You're telling me that the burglar that broke into his house was, in fact, the world's most cowardly, useless burglar who then decided to panic and lock himself in a bathroom.
You're focused on whether or not this actually would happen. The point is, if he thought that was going on, may be completely illogical, but that doesn't tell you whether he might have actually thought it was happening. Maybe he was drunk. Maybe he was half asleep and he didn't know and he didn't realize it and he didn't have the time to sit around the table like we are now and saying how illogical it would be that somebody would be in the bathroom. And so he thought, geez, my girlfriend is right here in the bed next to me. Somebody is in the bathroom. I may be a home invasion or something's going on here.
But again, though, what does logic tell you that when you wake up, his girlfriend wasn't in the bed next to him?
Oh, well, that's what he said. So I'm not saying he's right. My point is, like,
I don't think his alibi has a leg to stand on.
Well, yeah. So anyway, I would say, you know, I think it's more likely than not that he's guilty of this sort of stuff. But I'm willing to listen for a little while. The part of this is the fact that I have no reason to believe the South African police, right? Like, I mean, we're taking this
apparently the lead detective
is up for seven charges of murder.
Like, so he might have done it. That would be my defense. Right.
So, like, that's part of it is that I was like, I don't think anybody's got any credibility here. And so, like, when you hear a story from this come, oh, you know, the police department over there says this is what happened. I mean, for example, one of the police detectives said he found testosterone there.
Okay.
And there's vials of testosterone. The same day the police department had to say, oh, no, hold on a second. We found vials of something. It hasn't even been tested yet. We're not sure what it is kind of thing. But everybody's busy running on at the mouth about what's going on here. So, you know, I am willing to wait and see how these things shake out a little bit. Like I said, more likely than not he did it. But I also won't be completely stunned if it turns out, you know.
Put it this way. Talking of O.J. Simpson. Oscar Pistorius' defense attorney should be making it all about the cop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happened with O.J.
I'm sure that's what's going to happen.
Basically, I didn't do it. In fact, he might have done it.
Yeah.
This is the interesting thing, though, in all seriousness.
Well, of course, the difference here is he's saying he did it. He's just saying he did it on accident. There's no question about who shot. That's why I say the whole thing about shooting through the door evidence. Well, I don't need any evidence. He said he shot her through the door. It's just whether it was a mistake or not.
This is the interesting thing I find, though, about how this story is going to play out. Apparently in South Africa, and again, I looked at our internet stats. We don't have any listeners in South Africa, so unfortunately we don't have anyone who can write into us.
And now we never will.
We never will, no. Apparently in South Africa now, when he goes to trial, they don't have a jury there. They have a panel of judges. And the judges sit and listen, and then they decide. And so I was watching someone on telly who was saying that this is going to change. It changes how these cases play out. So, for example, if we think back to poor old OJ again, I say poor old OJ because did he do it or did he not? I can't remember what my position is on OJ now. I can't remember if I think he did it or if I think he didn't do it or if he got railroaded or I can't remember anyway.
We'll do like a retro podcast.
We will go back in time and pretend to be in 1995. Yeah. I remember in that trial, there's the famous putting on the gloves and all this kind of nonsense. Clearly, things like that are they are visual and emotive stunts for a jury. What they say in South Africa is because they don't have jury trials, when this thing is actually argued, for want of a better word, in front of the judges, there won't be any of that nonsense. And it does. It comes much more down to
much more
evidence and factual,
right.
And it's far less emotional.
It's not showy
than what we are led to believe right. trials are like on TV.
Right.
And even in the OJ case, that was actually a real trial on TV. It wasn't like that was a dramatization. I find that interesting about how this is going to play out.
Yeah, probably. I don't know how often like people plea or what they do or things like that. I mean, it could be certainly be a situation where I could see some sort of, you know, he's pleads out for some manslaughter, you know, criminally negligent homicide, whatever their corollary is over there, because he did shoot through the door.
And
if nothing else, he was an idiot, right?
Yes.
Like, listen, even if you take his story, then he ignored the logic that you have just...
Exactly.
Put upon us so that why would somebody be in your bathroom if they're invading
there you
your
go.
Home kind of thing.
There you see?
Maybe they were after his testosterone.
People think I'm crazy with these theories. But
they should stop there.
In fact, In South Africa, I'm like one of the main men because I just talk the facts.
That's right.
I could go to South Africa right now and convince everyone that the moon landings were fake.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the saying is. Like, if people think you're crazy, but the...
In the kingdom of the blind, the man that can see is the freak.
What?
But in the kingdom of the blind, the man who can see is the oddball, because everyone else is blind.
But I thought
the guy who can see is...
Doesn't that saying end with somebody's the king? In the something something, the somebody will be the king.
Oh, that's a different saying. In fact, the saying I was thinking for this incident is, if it looks like a duck, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. The guy put a whole load of bullets through the door and killed his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He should be going down for that.
Yeah, probably will.
Duck or no duck aside.
Now, we're not quite in spring yet.
We're not in spring.
You know, but as long as we're talking about sports.
But there's no longer a spring in his step. Da-dum.
I think you're going to have to clear some of these jokes in advance from here on out.
See, that's an interesting thing. I'm going to make a quick societal statement. The guy has just killed his girlfriend. Yeah, I'm a bad guy for making a joke about
it. Oh, I didn't say a bad guy. I just said it's a bad joke.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Spring is in the air.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the sports that kicks off this weekend? NASCAR. I mean, spring training has started, but let's get serious.
We can cover that.
NASCAR starts off with the Super Bowl because they have Daytona. We are recording this on a Saturday, so by the time anybody listens to this, everybody will know who has won the Daytona 500. I doubt anybody will have sat through the entire 5.5 hour broadcast that's involved
time.
In it.
Well, I do. I don't doubt. I know you will sit through it for 5 hours.
Oh, no, I won't. In fact, halfway through it, there's a Virginia basketball game on, so I have to, like, break away to watch the Virginia basketball
what
game.
What kind of a NASCAR fan are you that you're going to bail out yeah. in halfway through? What kind of performance?
I'm a halfway NASCAR fan. That's what kind of NASCAR fan I am. But, you know, we were just watching a little of the
You're
Nation.
A Chelsea fan. Would you bail out on, like, the first half of the Chelsea
this game? This is one of the reasons. We should sell everybody in watching soccer. The soccer games are 2 hours long. You know, we don't have, other than some of these tournaments where you might have a playoff or something like that, these cup events type of thing, it's 2 hours. You can count on sitting down and things will be done in 2 hours.
Let
Baseball,
me say this.
Football, all an uncertain amount of time that you have just committed to watching a sporting event. And the NASCAR, especially because what happens is you get to the end, and we just saw this because we were sitting upstairs before
waiting
we
to
came
record.
On
That's right.
watching the race, the nationwide race, which is the lower series race over at Daytona. There were 13 laps left. Oh, we'll watch. It's only 13
sure,
laps
I mean,
left.
I said to you, I said, that's
and
like 20 miles.
And then partway through it, they crashed and had to stop the whole race. And I said, it's going to be a half an hour before they start this thing up
again. And there
again.
Were four laps to go.
Exactly. So those are always big, eventful four laps. But, you know, what do you do for that? That's when you got to go, like, take on their tasks. I usually
when
I watch.
Why does it take 5.5 hours?
Because they crash a lot.
But, okay, so let me say. It's the Daytona 500. So it is 500 miles. They're going about 100. Are they going, what, 100, 120 miles an hour?
So
they going more than
no,
that?
How fast is one of those things? They top out 195.
195.
Well, actually, probably top out higher than that, because the qualifying times, like, so we were going to talk about Danica Patrick here in a second. She got the pole position, and her qualifying time was, like, 195, and that's for a full lap. So,
how many miles is a lap? Let me do the math now.
It's 2.5.
So it's 2.5. So she said she did 2.5 miles in how long? What was that time you just gave me?
Well, that wasn't a time. That was a speed.
Oh.
195 miles an hour.
So, okay. These cars are doing 160, 170 miles an hour, right,
yeah.
on average.
At least.
They should be done in 3 hours. That's the whole point of driving quickly.
It's only if they don't crash.
You take 5 hours, you might as well get the bus.
The one thing that's sort of confusing about some, I think Daytona 500 is actual 500, but some on the smaller tracks, it's actually 500 laps. So it's sometimes a little bit confusing.
But if Daytona was 500 laps, it'd be 1,000 miles. No, and then that would go on all day. It'd be the 24-hour race.
Yeah.
And that could be understandable. So the Daytona 500 takes 5 hours. And
well, the broadcast 5 hours. I mean, they do have like at least, you know, 2 hours of warm-up. It's interesting. Like most baseball games and things like that, they cut out all the there are pregame shows, but they don't really do them there.
Sure.
They don't show you the national anthem.
Okay.
You get in there on the game, but for the NASCAR races, you get the whole thing. The flyover is the whole bit when you turn in. So they may not actually start running the race until like 1 something in the afternoon. So it's not really a 5.5 hour. It's just a 5.5 hour time slot, and it frequently runs over is the other kicker. You know, you also get weather. That's the other thing. It kind of screws up a lot of games.
Sure, that's true.
Racing.
See, they stop in NASCAR, don't they, when it rains?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see. In Formula One, and I'm a big Formula One fan. In Formula One, you only stop when it is unbelievable deluge, Noah's Ark, animals evacuating, people standing on the roof of their house. That's the only time that it rains so badly that the Formula One race gets canceled.
Yeah, but they have these.
Otherwise, you change your tires and out you get.
Yeah, but don't they have some crazy rules about the tires? Like, well, here's the. I mean, you couldn't do it in NASCAR because they don't have a rain tire, so that they can't.
Whose fault is that?
Well, because they're going for something simpler. This is the thing that drives me nuts about F1, is that. You know, it is not a very accessible sport to somebody. I mean, like, listen, a Daytona.
What do you mean accessible sport?
Explain to
me.
Tell me the rules about tires. Don't they have, like, not only do they have rain and dry tires, but there's a special set of tires you can only use one time during the race.
I'm going to explain to you right now. A Formula One car, there are two different sorts of tires with two different levels of grip. In a regular race where it doesn't rain, you have to use at least one set of each once.
Why?
Because that's the rules.
But it's just random. It's like saying when you go golfing, on one of the holes, you need to hit it with a hockey stick.
Well, yeah, similar in theory, yeah.
Why would you do that to the sport?
Well, because actually that's why Formula One's Formula One. The whole point is, if you go into the Formula One rule book, every year the people that run Formula One tweak the rules. So what I'm saying is it's an organic thing. The formula for this year's car is you have to adhere to these rules.
I don't think
the whole point. The whole point is the car companies and designers constantly have to be innovating and pushing the edge. NASCAR, you just dump a few more horsepower under the hood and you shove it out there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying it's two entirely different things. Formula One is about constantly innovating and pushing and changing, and that's why you have the rules. And the rules are, you have to use one of these two different sets of tires.
Well, I think that's crazy. It's like, you know, if you're running a mile race, if you're a runner, right?
So have you ever played like Snakes and Ladders?
Is that the same as Chutes and Ladders?
Chutes and Ladders, yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to start with a six.
I don't know.
Now, I don't know why, but that's the rules.
Sure. Okay.
Well, that's the rules.
So we're basing F1 on Chutes and Ladders?
No, but I'm saying sports have rules.
But it's a random rule.
I don't want to hear why. You've got a rule.
And it changes.
The rule is you've got to start with a six.
Isn't it true the real reason they do that is so somebody will pass somebody?
Sure, they're trying to make it exciting as well.
Yeah, because they won't pass each other if we just all use the same tires the whole time and it'll really get boring.
Well, at least it won't last for 5 hours and people are self-admitting that they're checking out of the event. I'm a NASCAR fan, but I'm going to be going to the store from 1 o'clock.
So in addition to having the multiple tires, what you should do is when you run the mile race in the Olympics, what they should do is that one of those laps they have to change and run it in bowling shoes.
See, now you're being silly. In the Olympics, if you're throwing the shot put is a certain weight. You have to use that
but
weight
in
shot put.
It doesn't change weight during the course of the event. It's always the same weight.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And then don't they have like a thing where there's like some button you can press that makes your car go faster?
DRS.
But you can only use it for a certain amount of time?
Yeah, like a boost. It's like a video game where you use your boosters.
That's so strange.
No, it's not. It's just like in Star Wars when he's flying the X-Fighter and he's using the boost power to get away from Darth Vader.
I love Star Wars, but I don't want my sports to be like Star Wars.
Okay, fair enough. Are you looking forward to it, though? I know this is a sport that you...
Yeah, I mean, I follow it less than I used to.
But you've actually gone, though. You've gone to races.
Going to races is fantastic.
Really?
Have you been... I don't know what an F1 race is like, but, you know, going to the races is like...
I think all motor racing.
Yeah, and I've only been to Richmond, the local track, or, you know, Virginia track, and it's a small track, which I think is much better than... Like, the Daytona thing, it's so big, and they take forever to get around there. It's not as interesting as the smaller track, which they're going slower because you just can't go that fast around that track. But, you know, it's a lot more activity, a lot of banging around and things like that. And when the car gets damaged, you can continue to drive it, you know, if you bumped a bumper kind of thing. And so it's like last man standing at the end of the thing. And that's really loud because it's such a short track, there's always cars. Like if you go to Daytona, my understanding is since they're all in a pack.
It's a big pack that sort of moves around the field.
Like where you are... It's loud, and then it's quieter, and it's loud and quiet. Well, at Richmond, our short tracks, it's just always loud.
It's just constantly
So the first thing you do when you do there is you get earphones, or you get the best thing is the scanner, right? So you can get the headphones that you can hear all the car radios. Like, you can tune into Dale Earnhardt Jr.
That's
talking to his person. You can tune into, then you can tune into, like, a broadcast channel that's, like, an announcer. That they have like a local radio station.
So you can actually listen to the driver talking to his people and everything.
Yep.
See, I think that's great. That's the sort of thing.
It is. I think one of the reasons it's been very successful is this sort of it's perfect for technology. I mean, like, I've complained about the Tour de France in the past. Tour de France, when they broadcast it, you know, they give you a little bit of information where people are, but it's very difficult to figure out for sure what's going on. Well, you know, you watch NASCAR on TV now, and they've got all the electronics and telemetry kind of thing, so you can see who's where, and they've got always got a chart going of, like, the spacings and the difference, and, like, how many miles an hour they are going at a given moment in time. I always thought they should bring that stuff over to the Tour de France, because I think it would be making much more interesting than, you know, when you watch somebody who's pedaling, and it's just, you know, you're like, okay, what's going on? I want to know at this moment, are they going faster than people? Are they going slower? You know, what's going on here?
The big story out of Daytona, and I'm going to ask the question, and then I'm going to show a lot of taste and refrain from any moronic jokes that I may make. Danica Patrick won the pole. Is that a big deal? Pole position meaning that when the race starts tomorrow, or when the race would have started, if you were paying attention, she would have been the car right at the front. And an F1, being at the front of the field at the start of the race, is a big deal.
Yeah.
Is this a big deal that she achieved this? Is this a big deal in terms of how the race is going or did play out?
It's kind of a big deal in terms of her getting the pole. Like, you know, the way they do Daytona is a little different. Like, normally they run the laps and everybody does time trial and then you see the whole thing. And Daytona is sort of unusual in that only the first two spots in the field are decided that way.
Well, how does everyone else decide where
they do these races partway through the week? They call them the duels.
Okay.
And how the people place in that race actually dictates how you
So it's not random. You're not just drawing it out of a hat or something. There is a sort of...
And I think the reason they do that is because in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter very much where you start. Other than the fact that if you're in front, if they have an early crash, you're safer.
Yeah,
but other than that, if you have a good car, the fact that you're in the back, and as long as you don't crash, you're going to get around everybody to the front. It's not going to matter by the end. It is a big deal because it's still a challenge to win, to be the fastest car in the time trials.
You have a pretty quick car.
That's right. I mean, well, and you're a good enough driver. I mean, that's when you're driving out there.
Clearly not quick enough to cover the time, spend the distance in less than 5 hours. It would be
right. But when you drive out there by yourself. There is, like, you know, you drive a little bit higher line, a little lower line, that's going to make a tenth of a second difference, you know? And then, so, like, they have to know, if I put my car here, this is the maximum I can take it to without spinning it around in a circle and crashing into the wall. I mean, it's not unusual when they're doing that sort of stuff that somebody pushes it too far, they bang their car up against the wall, they got to bring a whole new car in, they end up having to go to the back of the field in the actual race and all that sort of stuff. In fact, I think a bunch of them didn't practice. Like, they have practice runs this morning. I think a bunch of them skipped it because it's too much of a chance you're going to end up smashing into something, and then you have to bring a new car in, you have to start in the back.
I have an exit question
but it's a big deal that she won. I mean, like, you know, this is a woman.
Okay, well, this is where my question comes.
But it's more of a PR big deal than it is.
Obviously, Danica Patrick, she's very attractive. She is a female driver, but she is not the first, and she's not the only. There are others who don't seem to get any coverage at all. Perhaps, I guess, and I don't mean this in any way other than the media probably don't find them as physically appealing. I mean, she's an attractive woman.
That's definitely part of it.
I think that's part of it. She's always had an awful lot of attention, yet her results really don't kind of jibe with the amount of attention she's got. as someone who believes that the moon landings were faked, I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. Was her winning the poll, do you think it was fixed and a great big publicity stunt on behalf of NASCAR?
It's not.
Considering that
fixed.
It doesn't really matter that she's the who, it doesn't matter whoever starts at the front. So you can afford to go, yeah, because I do know this week, at least, and I've seen it on UK websites, this has been a story in this country and around the globe that this very famous race, the person starting in the lead position is famous female race car driver Danica Patrick.
Yeah,
so I ask again, do you think this was in any way fixed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the NASCAR does have quite a few convenient coincidences that happen this sort of way when the big events happen. That she's run fast in trials before. She did not do well in race. She was doing horrible in the race this morning, this afternoon.
That's what I'm saying.
But that's not the same as what she was doing, which is why I say, like,
right,
she may be great at that sort of stuff. I mean, the other reason she was a big story is because she was another defection from Indy,
sure,
you know, from open wheel racing, and that's. Nobody's watching open wheel
racing
at all anymore now.
That is rubbish.
Meaning
that's
American
like
open wheel racing.
Stupid.
Yeah, right. So, but so she, that was another reason it was a big deal. But she's been, you know, a lot of hype behind her. And I mean, the thing is, in NASCAR, to some extent, it can be self-fulfilling because the more hype you have, the better brand you are, the better team, meaning like the ownership you're going to get on, you know, you're going to have more resources and things like that. There's a lot of people run in NASCAR in the lower levels who are just getting by, you know, and they know maybe they don't even have a sponsor for a time being, something like that. There was, anybody saw Talladega Nights? Did you see that movie?
With
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, yeah.
Yeah, so like he, in the movie.
But not O.J. Simpson.
Right, he ran one time with a, it was basically me. Like, you know, it was his logo on there because he couldn't get any sponsor.
Okay.
Well, last year, Kurt Busch did that because he didn't have a sponsor for a thing and he made an arrangement with the movie people. Said, can I just use your thing? And my joke about it being me, you know, like as the sponsor. Oh. And so he did that sort of stuff. But anyway.
How confusing to me. I thought he was part of Anheuser-Busch.
I don't think they're part of that same family. But what happens is now you get a good team behind you. I mean, her team is owned by Tony Stewart, who is a big champion. I mean, you know, like, and so they have more developing resources and things like that. And so, I mean, more than half probably doing well is your team as well as your driver kind of thing. I mean, I'm sure you know that's the same in F1, right?
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, no, like, you know, these people
like
who great,
like,
but they're
sports
as great as much because when they win races, now they get all the great resources behind them and then they can be whatever. And especially since most of the F1 cars basically drive themselves, you know, it doesn't really matter who's driving them.
All right, so the Atlantic Voice verdict is not fixed. So I can actually go back through everything we've done today. NASCAR, Danica Patrick, not fixed. Oscar Pistorius, you seem to be giving him the benefit of the doubt that he might be not guilty.
Might be.
When the meteorites attacked Russia, that actually wasn't the big story. That was not important. The car cams were important.
Yeah.
And let me see. King Richard III, I think it's a non-issue.
Well, see, I think
and
that's very
Star
important.
Wars, you are not concerned at the way the direction the franchise is.
Yeah, cool breeze.
All right. A couple of housekeeping business. I had been asking you, before we get out of the pod, like I say, some housekeeping business. How are the New Year's resolutions going for you? I know we had knife skills and fajitas.
Well, we're definitely eating fajitas. I haven't posted about any of them, but I've had at least 3 rounds of fajitas since the New Year. They've all been at the same place, mind you.
Oh.
But
so it's a good fajita day.
Yeah,
do you want to give that place a shout out?
I'm enjoying that fajita. El Paso Cafe in Arlington on South Pershing Drive.
North Pershing Drive. El Paso Cafe.
Over by corner of Glebe and Pershing.
And how are your knife skills going? I know that was
pretty good. I'm trying to remember. I definitely did something with the knife not too long ago. I think it was, when we got together for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And I was cutting something, and I was like, hey, look at me. I'm doing my knife skills kind of thing. But I haven't really, you know, taken much thing. Actually, I'll be going with another member of the Atlantic Voice family to a cooking class, and so I might have some opportunity to work on the knife skills there.
Perhaps you should call Oscar Pistorius. His defense could be, I thought the person in the bathroom had a knife. That could help him out.
Yeah.
This has been the Atlantic Voice podcast.
You know, make sure to tune in. We're looking for more car stories.
Yes,
I've got some car stories.
Some. That's right.
We're looking for stories about your favorite cars, you know, and you know, the quirks that they had or things like that or how cool they were or whatever it was. Send those to AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. Or you can, if you feel like, you can tweet them to us at Atlantic_voice.
And that Twitter is only 140 characters, so it doesn't take up a lot of your time.
That's right. It's very
a very
short story there.
To any car story that you have.
And, of course, you know, go check out the blog. And you could post it in the comments if you feel like at AtlanticVoice.net.
That's right. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Goodbye.
Take care.
You have been listening to the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us at atlanticvoice.net, email us atlanticvoice@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter @Atlantic_voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.